I'll open the, June 24th meeting of the House Committee on Environment and Energy. We have a forum, in fact, I think everybody's here.
Start the right foot, we're going to check the time.
Bernie's visiting the,
This summit meeting.
Summit meeting.
Call whatever.
He didn't hear, don't.
No.
Summit.
We're not going to do it again.
Not your what? I figured somebody had to add that whole fashion standards. You better announce it. Huh?
Nothing on wine cooler.
You better announce it.
I'd like to.
Just nothing on wine cooler.
Because the people are all over the place.
Sorry, Kim.
People are all over the place.
Committee.
Well, take a vote, see where the votes are.
Yeah, we're holding, we're still, we're coming with it.
I thought this was our last meeting.
Except on call. We will not be doing anything with Senate Bill 572. Let me announce, we will not be dealing with 572 today. Let me.
Half our audience.
Yeah, I know. Are we ready to move on 3475?
Yes.
I'll open the work session on House Bill 3475, Representative Keesley.
Yes, it's Chair. Following the hearing and work session on Wednesday, I was instructed to sit down with John Charles and the Oregon Forest Industries Council and the Department of Forestry to work out this bill on prescribed burning. What you have before you, both the hand engrossed version and set of amendments. Would you like me to briefly walk
Yes, please.
You through what the bill would do? The bill in Section 2 prescribes what the general policy is, which is to improve the management of prescribed burning where it's done, and also to minimize emissions from such burning consistent with
Wine cooler.
Bad for you.
There's all your wine cooler.
Air quality objectives.
Excuse me, just a minute. I announce we will not be doing anything with that bill. Thank you. Go ahead.
Federal Clean Air Act and the plan that's the Department of Environmental Quality is monitoring. What we have in Section 3, and this is where some of the language has been changed in terms of the kinds of programs that would be expanded on under this act. We see that on page 1B. Collection analysis of information regarding prescribed burning and other alternative slash management techniques. One thing we did in here is we interjected language in several important places relating to collecting information on and evaluating alternatives to burning. We see that both in A and B. We go back to the original bill in the language here. We go to on 1B, provides for a 5-person committee, two representatives from industry, two from the federal government, and one public member.
Now, where are we at this point, Phil?
That's Section 4.
Right there.
That's relatively, that's unchanged.
Well, that says, that says three members, not five.
Oh. No, but there's one member. There's a total of 5 members on the committee. 3 of them are appointed by
okay.
the Forest Service.
Right, thank you.
Another 2 from the Forest Service and the BLM. Section 5 charges the advisory committee with some tasks that weren't in the original bill. First of all, with relation to collecting information about prescribed burning operations, there's a general feeling that we lack some important information, such as the amount of emissions attributable to some of these burns, information about when they might be most effective. To give advice to the State Forestry Department on how to go about doing that, and then to review and comment on the report that's required under Section 6 of the Act. And Section 6 calls for a report from the State Forestry Department submit to the Legislative Assembly. I think it's important, sub 2, about modifications to the smoke management plan. It's the number 3, analysis of appropriate short-term and long-term strategies for reducing emissions from prescribed burning and for implementing alternative techniques for managing slash and woody material. Techniques are economically feasible, environmentally sound. Purpose, in my mind, and I think the minds of the group, that we use this change, and it's a two-year change, emphasize that again, it's going to sunset in 1991, but that we use this opportunity as a way to engage the legislature, engage the interested parties in looking at this whole area of prescribed burning and slash management, which we have not done as much on as many of us would like, and that this report will play a very important role in that. And I think, as the committee also recalls, that the program is going to be funded by fees that are collected for burning. $1.50 per acre and 50 cents per registration. The first time, really, that the burning program has been funded in that way. That's a significant change. But the final portion of the bill, which is Section 9, that repeals the Act on December 31, 1991, means that this legislature is going to have to evaluate whether we want to continue to do that or not. Gives us an opportunity to analyze the information that's collected over the next 2 years. I think, as the committee might recall, there was some concern when the bill came up last Wednesday that this might move us in an opposite direction than, let's say, what we were looking at with field burning, which is trying to reduce the amount of emissions into the air from certain practices. It's the feeling of the working group that having given the advisory committee some broader charges and direction to look not just at prescribed burning, but to look at alternatives, that this is going to be a constructive piece of the total. The total effort this legislature is going to need to take in 1991 to look at a range of outdoor clean air issues. And let me add one final thing, Mr. Chair. It was suggested that the date for when this report was submitted to the legislature be changed from September 15, 1990 to January 1, 1991. I think actually that's a good change. It'll give us a little bit more time and two complete burning seasons to do the report. I don't think the legislature, the interim committee in the fall of 1990 is going to have a chance to take much action on that. We have it at the beginning of the session. And I think that change is acceptable to the various parties in the negotiation, and I think that would help. That's on a hand engrossed at Section 6, first line of Section 6. Happy to answer any questions, and a number of people here worked with me on this to get it out.
Give us an indication of who the people were you worked with.
Worked with Ray Wilkinson, Ward Armstrong, John Charles, Fred Robinson, of the Department of Forestry.
Everybody on board on this?
Everybody's on board on this.
Okay. You make a motion for the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd move with that change of January 1, 1991, in the amendments.
Representative, we have a motion to
I would move the adoption of the 3475-4 amendments.
Okay, we've got a motion to adopt the proposed amendments. Representative Jones.
Mr. Chair, not knowing whether this fiscal impact has to go anywhere else, that's my
question. Well, that is a good point. I think we have a second referral. That
right.
Was a ways mean.
Yes. Is it a way to? Yes.
It's a fee basis.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Weehead.
Just a couple of questions about those fees. It's 50 cents per acre for registration of any forest land that's going to be burned that particular year, and then $1.50 per acre for forest land classified as Class 1. I'm not sure I understand the difference. How much forest land is Class 1 that would be subject to the $1.50, and why the difference? What's the difference between burning Class 1 forest land and burning non-Class 1 forest land?
Let me have
defer to the technical experts on...
We'll run it to two of you, come up a minute, three, all three of you, fine.
Representative Cease, members of the committee, I'm Fred Robinson, State Forestry Department. With me is Mike Zielko, who is our smoke management coordinator. Representative Wehodge, the question, as I understand it, is what acres does the 50 cents apply to, and what acres does the additional dollar and a half apply to? The 50 cents would apply to all acres that are burned, and right now we're talking about 100,000 acres per year. Well, I should say all acres that are registered and burned. What we anticipate happening with this is there will be very few acres that are registered and not burned. Right now, there is a little more slop between acres planned that go into our system as planned and acres that actually get burned, but we suspect that forest landowners that, you know, will plan less acres than they intend to burn, and there will be very little difference. So I think the answer is we anticipate that this thing will work out to about $2 an acre for all acres that are burned, and not a significant amount of revenue beyond that.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Is your desire to move this through Ways and Means and become law?
Mr. Chairman, Ward Armstrong with the Oregon Forest Industry Council. The answer to that is yes. And my understanding is the reason for Ways and Means is to authorize the positions. It's self-funded.
Thank you. Other questions, comments? Not. Is there an objection to the amendments? Representative Keasley.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3475 as amended to the Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation.
We move to send House Bill 3475 as amended to Ways and Means with the due pass recommendation. Any additional comment? Not. If the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Dix.
Aye.
Representative Hostica.
Aye.
Representative Jones.
Aye.
Representative Keasley.
Aye.
Vice Chair Parkinson.
Aye.
Representative Pickard.
Aye.
Representative Wehage.
Aye.
Chair Cease.
Aye. Motion carries, and I will close the work session on House Bill 3475. Thank Representative Keasley and the group for doing it. Appreciate it. Let me open the public hearing on Senate Bill 70. Let me ask Ron Ekus and Mike Kane from the PUC if they'll come up. Welcome.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dix.
Are you going to share with witnesses today how we'd like them to be brief?
Yes. Representative Dix wants you to understand that the committee would like you to be brief. He's anxious. He has a trigger finger. He wants to move motion.
Pew, pew, pew.
Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I will try and be brief. Senate Bill 70, the engrossed version you have, allows the Public Utility Commission to do deferred accounting for telecommunications utilities in the same way we have the authority to do deferred accounting for the energy utilities. During the last session, the legislature passed authorization for deferred accounting for energy utilities. Telecommunications was not covered. And at the same time, they passed legislation that created separate statutory scheme. The commission felt that the tools of the rate-making tool of deferred accounting had some appropriate usages in the telecommunications industry, and introduced the bill that would give us parallel authority. There were some objections and some concerns by the telecommunications utilities. What we ended up with was a bill that does give us the authority to do deferred accounting, but limits that use to some specific instances. What the bill does not include is some general language that is in the energy utility deferred accounting. but the utilities were, to some extent, worried about that. We met with the utilities and agreed upon this language, the exception, I think you will hear some dissenting testimony. The amendments that will be suggested, we do not support, with the exception of one change in language, of changing where we have the word profits, of changing the word to amounts.
Where would that appear?
Where is that specific?
Mr. Chairman, it's on page 2, line 10. And the change would be increases or decreases, and you would strike profits realized and add amounts incurred. So it would read increases or decreases in amounts incurred by a telecommunications utility, etc.
Thank you.
In general, we feel the bill it parallels the what happens in energy. It's balanced. The issue of deferred accounting has two phases. One is whether or not to actually defer the account. The second phase is whether or not to amortize at any point in time the rates that are deferred, or the amounts that are deferred into rates. At the first stage, the issue of deferred accounting can be raised by either the utility, by ratepayers, or in the commission's own motion. The commission has to make a decision to defer the account. And we believe it's balanced also in a sense that deferred accounting can benefit the utilities as often as it can benefit the ratepayers. You will hear in testimony a concern that it's not balanced, but I don't see any way that we can make it any more balanced. The concern is that the commission has the hammer, but frankly, that's what we're here for, and we do have the hammer. We're the decision makers, and I don't think you can eliminate us from having the hammer unless you eliminated the statutory responsibility of the PUC. We feel it is very balanced. We feel it is an appropriate application of a rate-making tool that, and it parallels what we have in the other industries that we regulate. We have reached agreement with most of the industry on the specifics, and it does limit the instances in which we can use deferred accounting.
Questions? Thank you very much. Orrin Floyd. Welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Orrin Floyd. I'm with the United Telephone of the Northwest. And I am here to talk about Senate Bill 70 in relation to some of the concerns that we have. We think there were basically two reasons why the bill was introduced, the first being that the commission would like to have the opportunity to capture some unanticipated revenues, such as those that occurred or could have occurred during the, or as a result of the 1986 Tax Reform Act. The second is a concern to all utilities, and that is, and to the commission as well, and that is the idea of regulatory lag, trying to find some way to smooth out the rate-making process so that you do not have sharp and frequent increases or decreases in rates, and we agree with that part of the bill. Our first concern, though, is with the balance of the bill. As Commissioner Ika spoke, he said he could not think of a way that the bill could be balanced so that the commission didn't have the hammer. That was their authority. In thinking about that, one of our concerns is that deferred accounting can be initiated by application of a utility, a ratepayer, or on the commission's own motion. And then there has to be some kind of hearing or rulemaking that would allow for the commission to approve of the deferred account as to whether it was going to be there or not. And our concern about that is the commission's own motion, number one. If they made such a motion, chances are that was going to be approved. But if a utility came in and applied for deferred accounting, there was no assurance at all that you could get the deferred account or even I mean, if the commission disagreed with you, probably you wouldn't get it. And yet, there would be a legitimate reason for it if the bill is adopted, because these things are outlined in the bill, or there's things outlined in the bill that would apply to deferred accounting. So what we were thinking that we would like to see some way where there was a balance. For example, if we did come in and apply for a deferred account and it fell under one of the categories that were approved, then it would automatically be, it would go forward from that date. And subsequently, there would be a decision made in the rate-making process when you were in a rate case as to whether that would be an allowable expense or allowable revenues, whatever the case may be. We're also concerned that the bill could be a potential hunting license for any unanticipated things, or let me back up a minute. Let's say that there were some revenues produced for some reason or another, and I can't think of a reason right now except the Tax Act is a good example. Almost anybody could apply under this bill for a deferred account. The Citizens Utility Board, for example, any ratepayer, and the commission. But again, the company or the firm is at a disadvantage in that upon application, it doesn't have to be approved if the commit or the utility was to apply. So we're concerned about the imbalance of the bill. As a suggestion, what we thought we would like to see is that the items, there are 10 paragraphs that define where deferred accounting would occur. And we thought that if the paragraphs that were, if it was limited only to those things that were outside the control of management of a company, that would be the way the bill would be most appropriate and acceptable to us. And thus, we would recommend that you would eliminate all the paragraphs with the exception of A, C, and D, and that we would amend I to read increases or decreases in amounts occurred by a telecommunications utility resulting from changes mandated by the FCC, the commission, or a legislative body with respect to depreciation rates, accounting methods, tariff prices, expense allocations, and serving arrangements such as extended area service or boundary changes or mandated single-party service. And then the last change we'd recommend is that, in the very least, if all 10 of the areas were retained in the bill, that J, as Commissioner Eek has stated, J should be changed to strike the word profits and substitute, strike the words profits realized, I guess it was, and yeah, substitute the words amounts incurred. That makes it consistent all the way through.
What difference does that make? Explain to me what the significance is between those two phrases.
Well, in all the previous paragraphs, you're dealing with either expenses or revenues, and they can be on a negative side or a positive side. But if you're dealing with profits, you're only dealing with one side of the ledger, and that is the side that's on the profit side. You're not dealing with the negative side of the ledger.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Lord. We're in hearing. John Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, representing Continental Telephone of the Northwest. Chairman, we have similar concerns to those just expressed by United and have reviewed their testimony and concur. I think it's important to note that in the earlier testimony, it was recalled that last session you passed a bill exposing the electric other utilities to deferred accounting. And I think it's important to note that those utilities do undergo many more frequent variations from a greater number of sources in trying to purchase energy and with the fluctuation of energy costs. And so I think it makes a lot more sense to have a broader deferred vehicle there. What Senate Bill 70 in the form it was introduced in, and to a certain extent in the form it's still in, is retroactive rate making. And I think you can understand the concern of any business under those concerns. In fact, I think the PUC has even defined it as a version of retroactive rate making. And so as a consequence, we too would like to see some limitations placed upon the use of that kind of a rate making mechanism. Our company services very small areas and has had rate filings on average of every 3 to 5 years. You can defer for 12 months under this plan, and then we would have to apply for an extension of those deferrals. The way it works now with that kind of fluctuation is those things are put together in a rate case and evened out over a period of time through the rate making process. So we do think that the limitations expressed by Mr. Floyd would improve the bill and recommend them for your consideration.
Questions? Thank you, John. Dave Overstreet, is he here? Maury, why don't you come on up to, let me ask, Ray, do you want to give testimony on this bill? Come on up.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Dave Overstreet representing GTE Northwest. I will be very brief. GTE Northwest is neutral on this bill. We have run United's amendments by our people, however, and we feel that their amendments would make this a better bill. So we are supportive of United's amendments. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Just
a, yes, go ahead.
I hear you say you're neutral on the bill, but you support the amendments.
We can live with the bill the way it is, but we feel that it would probably be a better bill if United's amendments are adopted.
Better neutral.
A better neutral.
I'm into words this morning. Thank you.
He needs Vera's dictionary.
Mr. Astley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Maury Astley. I represent the Oregon Independent Telephone Association. And I'll be very brief, won't cover the other points people have made about the way this is unbalanced and so forth. And we're not neutral, we're just opposed to the bill. And the main reason, let me just make this point because I haven't heard it. The last two sessions, this committee has worked hard to reduce legislation or to reduce regulation in our industry, recognizing where this industry is going and the environment that we're currently working in. This particular bill originally, last session, did include the telephone companies, and we weren't exempt because of the split bill. We were exempt because we asked for an exemption, and we received it. And I would agree that this bill can be a good or a bad bill for the industry, but it goes in the wrong direction of regulation, and we would prefer not to give the commission more regulatory powers at a time when we're reducing regulation on our industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Ray Gribbling. I represent U.S. West. We had some problems on the Senate side on this bill. We had indicated that we wanted them to be more specific to commission's actions. They have accomplished this to our satisfaction, and I did testify to that fact in the Senate. And I was only speaking for my company, U.S. West. So we are neutral on the bill.
Okay. I guess I was under the impression that this was bill was originally requested by U.S. West. No, I guess that's not right. Thank you. Questions? Ron, why don't you come on up a minute, I think. That's all the testimony. There's anyone else who wanted to testify on Senate Bill 70, is there? Let me close the work session, or the hearing on Senate Bill 70, and open the work session on Senate Bill 70. And
Ms. Chairman,
Representing Parkinson.
There seems to be one non-controversial amendment I'd like to move.
I don't have any amendments in my folder.
Just this one.
Page 2, line 10, strike profits realized.
Right, amounts incurred.
Amounts incurred.
Is there any objection to that amendment? Not, we'll accept that. Let me ask you, Ron, I'd be interested from this bill, as I recall now, is
introduced at the request of the commission. From the point of view of the telephone companies, we either get neutral or opposed. Give us your sense of the nature of that conflict, would you?
I think there are several. Deferred accounting is something that had traditionally been used in the electric and natural gas rate-making process because of the effect of things, changes in gas purchases, changes in DPA costs, and it was designed to allow you to take unanticipated events. When you set rates, you set them for the future based upon an anticipated revenue requirement. You end up with unanticipated events. Growth, changes in capital are not the kinds of unanticipated events that I'm talking about. You have certain cost factors, many of which are similar in energy and telecommunications, many of which are not. But you have changes such as that during the period of time that those rates are in effect will change the cost or revenues of the utility. It was primarily used in the energy field, and I think what you have is a real lack of experience in the telecommunications industry of the use of deferred accounting, a great deal of uncertainty and unsurety as to how it would be used. We spent a great deal of time just trying to explain the concept and the types of instances in which it could be used. I think you do have the fear that the commission would be making decisions, but if you listen to Mr. Floyd's testimony, he would have it automatically approved for utilities, but I didn't hear any mention that ratepayers, if they applied for deferred accounting, would have their application.